Hi, Patrick here, and today's part is, what's bilingualism with a musical twist? The music right now that you're hearing is from a band, Balkan Tribes. Balkan Tribes is an earlier iteration of a Boston-based musical collective called Clash of Civilizations. Full disclosure here, a couple of them are now friends of mine. We became friends after I did a story on them when they were called Balkan Tribes. And take a look at the world past what our eyes can see. Just the light of a soul standing side by side. Not defined by our skin, but by our energy. Anyway, back in the days when they were recording as Balkan Tribes, the group members, they were mainly, well, Balkan, from various parts of what used to be called Yugoslavia. And this song, it's interesting. The first couple of minutes is this spoken word, rap, American. The words delivered by an American. Very much the sound of the new world where all these Balkan musicians ended up. But then, and you're going to hear this soon, the song sort of flips. It returns home. It goes back to the Balkans. Specifically, it returns to the birthplace of the mother of this one vocalist, Alma Vucinic. Now, Vucinic, she's from Serbia, but her mom was born in Montenegro, which is right next door to Serbia, only it's wilder, more mountainous, more romantic. She told me that when she was a kid, her mother would sing her an old Montenegrin lullaby, and that's what she's singing here. Now, Alma and her colleagues in Balkan Tribes, they were expressing, just within one song, a sort of bi-musicality, something that a lot of people experience to one extent or another, especially here in the United States. It's essentially people who grew up with two musical traditions, and neither of those traditions is exotic to them. They both just sound natural and normal. And actually, even more than with the Balkan Tribes musicians, who they all emigrated to the United States as young adults, even more than with them, you get, with the children of immigrants, you get this bimusicality. They eat two home cuisines. Maybe they speak two home languages. And they listen to two home styles of music. Now, funnily enough, there hasn't been much study of this musical multitasking and how it affects the brain, whether it works in the same way, for example, as growing up bilingually, or whether it works differently. Well, now there is a new study on this aspect of our hyphenated existence. And here to spill the beans about it is reporter Audrey Quinn.
Jason Viñoles grew up in New York City, but his parents are Argentine, like a lot of children of immigrants. He spoke two languages with his family.
I'd be on the phone with my parents, and I'll just switch back and forth. If I can't think of the word right away in Spanish, I'll say it in English, but then keep on going with the conversation.
Viñoles' family would also switch back and forth between other things American and Argentine, sports team loyalties, cuisines, and especially musical styles. His mom was a big fan of the Beatles.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you tomorrow. Anytime a Beatles song would come on the radio on the oldest station, she'd like come grab me and make me dance.
The same kitchen floor dance party would also include more traditional Latino music, like Cielito Lindo.
Ay, 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 canta, no llores.
They'd also dance along to Madonna, then a bit of Argentine tango. Patrick Wong studies how the brain processes sound at Northwestern University. He recently became interested in people like Viñoles.
Listeners who grew up listening to Beatles and tangos side by side, they might develop a brain that is different.
Different from someone who grew up listening to just Western music or just Latin music. Wong was wondering if the brain has special ways of handling two musical systems. He recruited people who grew up listening primarily to Western popular music. And then he had another group of people, Indian Americans, who grew up listening to both Western music and the traditional music of India. These are Indian rhythms, to his research subjects who grew up with just Western music that didn't sound, well, quite so homey.
They use a dial to tell us the tension that they feel in the music that they hear.
And most of the monocultural Americans dialed in, saying the Indian music had more tension. But the people who grew up with both Western and Indian music, they didn't feel any more tension in one music than another. Here's the Western music Wong used. People who are equally at home listening to two different cultures of music, Wong calls these people bi-musicals. Now, he had his study participants listen to the music inside a scanner.
We use a technology called functional magnetic resonance imaging.
That's fMRI for short.
So that's basically a technology that can help us look at how the brain activate.
And what'd you see?
So what we found was that if you were bi-musical, you tend to engage a larger network of the brain when you listen to the two kinds of music.
The people who had grown up with both Indian and Western music, they had a more elaborate brain system for listening than the people who grew up with just Western music. Wong's bi-musicals also engaged more areas of their brain when listening to music.
They engaged not only the auditory areas of the brain, but also the amygdala.
The emotional region of the brain.
So what we are thinking is that perhaps if you're bi-musical, to you, to differentiate whether the music that you listen to is Western or Indian music, perhaps you also need to engage the emotional part of the brain to separate out the two types of music.
Wong isn't saying that only bi-musical people experience music emotionally. We all do that. It's more that bi-musicals may tap into that region of the brain in order to toggle between multiple musical styles. Gigi Luke researches bilingual learning at Harvard. She's also seen signs of enhancements in the brains of people who grew up with two verbal languages.
Generally speaking, we found a better performance in what we call executive functions,
which involve things like planning, problem-solving, multitasking.
And we see this advantage across the lifespan from young children to older adults.
Now, bilingualism has clear differences from Wong's bimusicalism. For one thing, speaking a language is more active than listening to music. Still, Gigi Luke's not surprised by Wong's findings. She believes that all that switching, whether between languages or between musical cultures, it leaves a physiological impact.
Our experiences, whether they're musical or linguistic, actually shape our brain and give us a qualitative difference in brain networks.
We still have more to learn about just how that qualitative difference plays out in the bi-musical brain. But Patrick Wong believes his research opens a door.
This is telling us that perhaps being bicultural might change our biology in a fundamental way.
But does that give the bi-musical, bi-cultural mind the same sort of cognitive edge as the bilingual mind? That's for a future study. For the world, I'm Audrey Quinn.
Well, until that future study comes out, maybe we can just soak up the product of, well, many multi-musical minds. Better head to New York, to the East Village, to a low-ceiling, dimly lit club, where once a month at this place, a group of people gather to soak up the sounds of something called Boogaloo, which is a kind of New York at the crossroads of a mind-blowing number of musical genres. Reporter Bruce Wallace went to this club recently, and he got his crash course in this type of music from a band whose very name drops a pretty strong hint about the bimusicality of Boogaloo. In fact, it's bilingualism. The band is called Spanglish Fly.
Getting on towards midnight on a Friday when the 11 members of Spanglish Fly get started. The bass leads into a signature tune, a version of the spiritual Go Down Moses, spiced up with some soul and Latin flavors. They call it Let My People Boogaloo. The boogaloo being allowed here goes back not to Moses, but to the mid-1960s in Harlem, way uptown. In Harlem back then, African and Italian Americans lived side by side with recent Latino immigrants, many from Puerto Rico. This is where the music called Boogaloo was born. Hey, According to legend, the Joe Cuba Sextet was on stage one night in 1966, playing mambos and cha-chas to a largely African-American crowd, and the crowd wasn't feeling it. The group's timbale player suggested a simple rolling figure to the piano player. The band jumped in, and the whole place started dancing. The song, Bang Bang, spent 10 weeks on the Billboard charts, and Boogaloo had arrived.
Everything about it is inviting to everybody.
Jonathan Goldman is Spanglish Fly's leader and trumpet player. He describes Boogaloo as a rich mix of Latin music with American blues, soul, and R&B, a fitting musical expression of Harlem in the 60s.
The music is designed to invite everyone in racially. It's designed to make everyone dance, whether you know the steps or not. It's that combination of naivete and utopianism with the, I guess, the weird ingredient added of it being funky and nasty at the same time.
Musicians like Joe Cuba, Johnny Colon, and Pete Rodriguez rode the Boogaloo wave for the next 4 years, playing to bigger and bigger crowds and sharing bills with the likes of The Temptations, James Brown, and Marvin Gaye. While it was gathering fans outside of Spanish Harlem, the music was also getting younger Latinos into Latin music.
Latin Boogaloo is essentially the bridge.
Journalist Matthew Ramirez Warren is finishing up a documentary about Boogaloo called We Like It Like That.
Whereas a lot of them viewed mambo as their parents' music, these kids at the time needed a sound that reflected their experience, and that's what Boogaloo was.
Of course, the music had its detractors, too.
It met a lot of resistance by the purists, which new things usually do.
Javier Verne was deep into the Latin music scene in the 60s and 70s, as a musician and as a producer on some seminal Boogaloo and salsa albums. I met him at Spanglish Fly's show. He says that Boogaloo's accessibility, its simple lyrics and contagious rhythms, turned off a lot of Latin music aficionados. This resistance was one of several factors that blew Boogaloo off the airwaves and out of the dance halls in the early 70s.
Woke up. It's a glorious day. Got the sun on my shoulders as I ride to the bay. I'm going down the green.
The members of Spanglish Fly are part of a group of people bringing it back. They're updating it some, too. The group has a female lead singer, which was uncommon back in the day. So, too, is having as many original songs as the band has. This one, a new single called Me Gusta Mi Bicicleta, conjures the joy of riding a bicycle through New York's boroughs on a sunny day. For his part, Javier Verne is pretty excited to see the sounds of the old days making a comeback. He's even signed on to produce some new Spanglish Fly sessions. And he notes, with some irony, that the new interest in Boogaloo being generated by Spanglish Fly and others might drive people to discover other, more quote-unquote pure styles of Latin music.
Once you bring that young generation back into the music, via Boogaloo even, then they will start to wonder and go deeper. So the thing that the purists denied might be their savior in the end. That is poetic justice.
Poetic justice with a Boogaloo beat. For the world, I'm Bruce Wallace.
And that's the pod today. See you on Facebook, Twitter. My Twitter handle is Patrick Cox, PatriCox. Or I'll see you at theworld.org/language. I'll be back again in a week. See you then.